Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Offspring Magazine podcast. I'm Julie, and I will be hosting this episode. Today you will listen to my conversation with Tarek Hassan. Tarek is a postdoc at CEMAT, the Center for Energy, Environmental and Technological Research in Madrid. He and his colleagues use telescopes that were originally built to measure gamma rays to observe visible light from stars. With a technique called stellar intensity interferometry, they can measure the shapes and sizes of stars with a high precision. To advance this research last year, he was awarded an ERC grant. Tarek talks about why these measurements are important and explains how interferometry works and what the future applications might be. So stick around and enjoy this episode. Hello, welcome Tarek. Thank you so much for joining this podcast, taking the time out of a very stressful day.
Yes, too many people want to see me.
Maybe we can start by you telling us a little bit about who you are, what you usually do, and why you are here today in Munich.
Yes, so hello world, I'm Tarek Hassan. So I'm currently a postdoc in Madrid. So I spent some years in Berlin at DESI, but now I'm back in Madrid, and I'm here because we have a meeting in the MAGIC collaboration, the working group that is actually working in optical interferometry, which is the field that I'm working on mainly lately.
Yeah. So maybe for full disclosure for our listeners, we know each other because we are both members of the MAGIC collaboration. I think we will cover the MAGIC telescopes later on in the conversation, what they are, how they work. You're part of the special group, the outsider somehow in the collaboration.
Yes. So it's a telescope clearly that was designed to do very high energy gamma ray astronomy. And we're doing something completely different, which is optical interferometry, which is something super hard to understand, which I will make a great effort.
Yes.
just to make it a bit easier to understand.
Because I have listened to some of your talks or like talks of the group, and I still don't really get it how it works.
So I apologize. Interferometry is very nice.
Yeah.
That's super hard to understand.
Yeah.
Our bad.
Yeah. So maybe let's start with, you're saying optical interferometry, and you're focusing on stellar interferometry. That's what you always call it, right? So you're observing stars.
Yes.
So what exactly do you achieve with these observations? What do you look at of the stars?
Perfect. So this interferometry technique is generally used for high angular resolution measurements, which means getting very sharp knowledge on whatever you're studying. No? So in our case, we need very bright and small objects, and because nature is this way, the thing that is very bright and very small are the stars that are far away. No? They are really, really tiny. So the rule of thumb that we always use is the size of the closest stars, meaning the ones that you look up the sky and you see the stars with your bare eyes. You can imagine a 2 euro coin in the Eiffel Tower, for example. If you go to New York and you look at that coin, that is the equivalent size of a star, okay? So it's really, really tiny, okay? Mm-hmm. It's something very, very, very small to measure, no? And that's why when you think of these super famous optical telescopes like the James Webb Telescope, the Hubble Space Telescope, all these telescopes are not able to measure the size of stars. They just see them as points.
Yeah.
They are able to do amazing science, of course,
but
they are not as sharp as needed for. That's why you need interferometers, these crazy complex telescopes, to do such fine and sensitive measurements to the size of these stars. No? This is the main science target. So scientific things that we can do by doing a stellar intensity interferometry or stellar interferometry. For example, Gaia, the Gaia satellite that maybe some of you have heard of has measured the distance of thousands of millions of stars, okay? Mm-hmm. So it's mind-blowing. But the amount of stars that we know directly, like we have actually measured how large they are. So, for example, we can measure how large the sun is, right? Literally looking at it, we can. Yeah. But any other star, can we? With our eyes, certainly not.
Yeah.
And the amount of stars that we have directly measured is roughly 1,000.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's literally 1,000,000 difference yeah. in order of magnitude, okay? So yeah. so this means that even if we have gone very far towards detecting many stars and knowing yeah. that they are there, actually being certain of their size, mm-hmm. which is something very boring, like, okay, just knowing how big is yeah. a star. But it is so hard to measure
yeah.
that there are just very few stars that have been directly measured. Yeah. So things that are more complex, for example, stars, when they rotate very fast, mm-hmm. they are not spheres anymore. They become flatter. They are like a melon or something.
Okay.
Understanding how rotation affects their evolution, mm-hmm. etc., is something very important for especially for very massive stars.
Yeah.
And these very massive stars are the ones that later on explode and becomes black holes, and then those black holes create gravitational waves. It's an important topic.
Yeah.
And understanding so actually being able to take a picture and actually mm-hmm. seeing how melon they
yeah.
are.
Yeah.
It's something that very few telescopes can do.
Okay.
Only a handful of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So these are the kind of things that we can do. Dreaming, you could also dream many things.
Yeah.
What I always like to dream about is being able to measure the shadow of a exoplanet passing in front of mm-hmm. a star. That is sexy.
That would be
beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's very hard to understand astrophysics,
yeah.
but if you see an image of an exoplanet passing in front of a star, then
yeah.
it's done.
Yeah.
It's done. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's pretty cool.
That is beautiful. That would be nice.
Yeah, I think it's pretty incredible that, I mean, I have the feeling that we know a lot about stars. There are many. You mentioned how many, and you get the feeling that astronomers, you know, over the years have accumulated a lot of knowledge about how stars work, like all the different types, how they evolve, all of that. But it's incredible that something as simple or basic as the actual size is something that is not known. And yeah. I'm wondering, because, I mean, they have some ideas, I guess, right? They work with sizes, but it's just models that they use, I guess.
Exactly, exactly. So. Of course, what I'm saying is that they have not been directly measured,
mm-hmm.
but there are ways to measure them indirectly,
mm-hmm.
like with this complex technique, like asteroseismology, like measuring the vibration modes within the stars. There are ways in which you can actually infer the radius, but this is super, even more complex to explain
yeah.
now. No? But something as simple as, like, take a ruler and measure the size of this table, like mm-hmm. directly measuring the size of this table, is something that is really hard to do with stars.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like you say, so we know there are spectral types of
yeah.
stars. We know how they evolve by seeing how they move over the years, over the millions of years,
yeah.
in the Helmholtz-Russell diagram. So there are ways to know what is their size. But we base that knowledge on models.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you fix those models? With mm-hmm. direct observations.
Yeah.
So it is actually crucial. For some time ago, actually, there were specific spectral types of stars that had never been directly measured.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, there are few spectral types that seem to have offsets with respect to models.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the kind of things that, yes, okay, we have a lot of knowledge on stars, but there are clearly things that we don't fully understand. No?
Yeah.
So things improve when you provide better measurements.
Yeah, right. So then that's a way also to test those models and
yes.
improve them. Yeah.
That's what experimentalists like
yeah.
to think,
yeah.
that our work is useful. Maybe a theorist will tell you, you know, stars, they are this big, doesn't matter, plus, minus 3%, it's fine.
Yeah. okay,
So, okay, maybe let's get into it. How does it work?
Cherenkov telescopes first, and then interferometry.
Okay, let's do it.
So who explains what the Cherenkov telescopes are?
We can do it together.
Okay. Good. So they are big.
Yes.
So the main difference between a Cherenkov telescope and a classical optical telescope is that classical optical telescopes directly measure the light of galaxies, no? Mm-hmm. And create a beautiful image. And what we do is indirectly measure the photons that are created in showers of particles generated when a gamma ray hits the atmosphere. They create a flash of blue light that lasts nanoseconds. Mm-hmm. This means that it's a millionth of a second, so it's really, 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 really brief. And because they are so brief, these flashes of light, the whole telescope changes. Mm-hmm. This is more or less the long story short. So the camera is made of pixels that are crazy fast. The whole camera is running at frequencies that are crazy fast. And we cannot use the cameras that we use here.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we cannot use these cameras, so we need to use other technologies. And we do gamma ray science.
Yeah, I always like to this comparison of, because our cameras, they have 1,000 pixels, which compared with any cell phone, like mobile cameras, nothing.
Yeah.
But we take 1,000,000 pictures a second.
Yes, and we show images in our meetings, workshops, and they are just the most horrible image that you can imagine. And then you have these optical astronomers showing beautiful supernovae while we show just a Gaussian. Yeah, there is extension there. It's just so depressing.
Yeah, it is depressing a bit. But it's also, I mean, the technology that we use is impressive.
Yes, and the fact that we are measuring photons with so crazy energy, it's also incredible too.
Yeah.
So it's fun in our own way.
Yeah.
Harder to sell with beautiful images, but very nice. So this is what Cherenkov telescopes do.
Yeah. So Cherenkov telescopes basically, so they work very differently from optical telescopes, because basically what we look at, what we in the end observe, is not the light from some galaxies or stars or whatever that is coming to us, but the light is created in our atmosphere by extended air showers of billions of particles that are produced in the atmosphere by these high energy particles that are hitting the atmosphere from whatever galaxy we are observing.
Exactly. So that's the main difference. But this constraint of measuring something that lasts for a few nanoseconds imposes that our telescopes need to be super big. Like the magic telescopes are 17 meters in diameter, and there are two of them, because we like to take photos simultaneously of the same shower.
Yeah.
And that's how we can properly reconstruct where the gamma ray was coming from, identify it as a gamma ray and not as a cosmic ray, etc. No?
Yeah.
So this technology, this Cherenkov telescopes, come in arrays, in multiple telescopes. They are very large, and they have cameras that are extremely fast.
Mm-hmm.
And these three technical aspects of Cherenkov telescopes are exactly why they are interesting for interferometry. So it's like pure serendipity here. Like in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
there was an experiment called the Narrabri Stellar Intensity Interferometer. That was the first interferometer ever done. Like, not even radio antennas were working at the time, no? And these people were pushing for creating a pair of telescopes. They created a six meter diameter telescopes, no? Two of them in rails. They were like in a train, no? And,
okay.
and they could move the telescopes. And what they wanted to show is that by measuring the two signals from the star, they would measure a correlation. So some of the photons coming from the star would come exactly at the same time in the two telescopes, exactly with the same frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And the number of those correlated photons would have information on the actual size of the star. No? So something that is really hard to understand, and we would need to get into quantum physics that I don't know about, so let's not get there. But the point here is that during a time in which quantum physics was being doubted,
yeah,
there were some people that wanted to make a direct measurement of stellar diameters, mm-hmm, using quantum properties of light, no?
Yeah.
Which was crazy. And they were able to measure the diameter of 32 stars that are still, nowadays, after 60-70 years, the best diameters available for those stars.
No.
Yeah, so yeah, so intelligent people back then created this technology already.
Yeah.
No? And the funny thing is that these telescopes, these Narrabri stellar intensity interferometers, they were very large.
Yeah.
They needed a photo detector super fast to measure this variability in both telescopes. And they needed multiple telescopes to actually change their distance, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just serendipitously very high energy Cherenkov telescopes require exactly the same thing as intensity interferometers, which is funny.
No? Yeah.
And the technique, like 60 years ago, was abandoned essentially because it needed cameras that were too fast for the time,
yeah,
mirror areas that were crazy big. They were too big for them, no, to handle at reasonable costs. And also, the more telescopes, the better, but it's very expensive to build many telescopes.
Yeah.
No? But yeah, so now,
now
we Cherenkov people are doing exactly that. No,
yeah.
And the next generation of Cherenkov telescopes is coming now, the Cherenkov telescope array, which will be made up of, like, I don't know, 100 telescopes distributed over very large distances.
Yeah.
And yeah, there were some people within CTA, some experts in intensity interferometry that were like, wait a minute, if you give me that telescope, we modify this and this and this, tiny pieces, I promise you, they are really tiny pieces. You modify them, we can do this other thing, you
know? Yeah.
Which they are very far in terms of science, but technically it's easy.
Yeah.
It's easy.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So cool. Okay. So kind of my question was also like, why are we only starting to do this now?
Yeah. So it's very easy to answer. So for a given amount of money, it's easier, and you will get better sensitivity if you go to this other path of optical interferometry. This what is generally called optical interferometry, because all optical interferometers right now use this amplitude interferometry, like the Keck telescope, the Chara telescope, BLTI telescopes, or major telescopes that are operating as an interferometer right now.
Mm-hmm.
They have they gather light from stars,
mm-hmm,
and they physically take that light, pipe it through some tubes, combine physically the photons, no?
Yeah.
And then they measure physically, they make a photo of the interference pattern.
Yeah.
Like, that is super complex to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they need to control the path of every single photon,
mm-hmm,
down to nanometer scales. Like, it's crazy that they are able to do it, no?
Yeah.
If you, for example, create a couple of small telescopes, like 1 meter telescopes, no,
mm-hmm,
and then you do this, you have better sensitivity than if you have like these 6 meter telescopes doing this intensity interferometry, because they are different techniques.
Okay.
And directly combining the photons provides better sensitivity. It is the nature of the technique itself.
Okay.
No? The key aspect here is that it is so expensive to build, to control the path of the photons,
uh-huh,
to nanometers, that if you decide to do this with telescopes that are way, way bigger, it starts getting more and more and more expensive, no? And amplitude interferometers are now reaching like a limit.
Okay.
No? In terms of distance between telescopes. So,
mm-hmm,
the longer the distance is, the more complicated it is to have a hold on how precise each photon is moving. While for us, for this other technique, this intensive interferometry, doesn't matter. Just put wherever you want the telescopes, as long as you give me just a couple of cables connecting them, it's more or less possible to correlate.
But the distance between telescopes also is like improving the sensitivity. Right?
Yes. So we can think about radio telescopes now. Mm-hmm. No? When we think of radio telescopes, we think of these multiple antennas that create beautiful images of AGN, of the galactic center. Radio telescopes are amazing nowadays.
Yeah. I did an episode about the Event Horizon telescope.
Yeah, so exactly. Of course.
If you have listened to this, you should know what we're talking about.
So the Event Horizon telescope was able to measure the shadow of a black hole. Essentially, they are limited by the size of the Earth. They transform the whole Earth as a telescope. And the bigger your telescope is, the smaller it is the things that you can study.
Yeah.
For instance, the black hole of these, the shadow of these black holes is the smallest thing that we have ever made a photo of, no? It's really absolutely tiny, no? It's a factor 20 smaller than what I said before. It's a factor 20 of this coin in Paris seen from New York. Yeah. A factor 20 smaller.
Yeah.
If you wanted to do that in the optical, you can.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be so expensive to put telescopes separated by 5 kilometers and control the optical path so well to be able to combine them, etc. It would be expensive. No? Possible, but expensive. While using this other technique, the one that we are testing with the MAGIC telescopes, it is way simpler technically. No?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the reason why now we are starting to push for it.
Yeah.
Because in one hand we have telescopes that are able to do it, so why not doing it? Also, it's nice that we can perform these measurements over bright moon periods, mm-hmm. in which our telescopes, they are essentially not operating. Therefore, we are getting science out of these telescopes for free.
Yeah.
And in addition, thinking about the future, if we are going to have 20 telescopes in the Northern Hemisphere with this CTA Northern Observatory Array, and like 100 in the South, well, there are not that many, probably in the end it will
we'll
be 50.
See.
We'll see. But yeah, so having so many telescopes, the prospects are amazing. There is this other limitation that I have not been talking about, about the number of telescopes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only how sensitive you are, etc. It's how well you can reconstruct the image. No,
mm-hmm.
So in radio, they build radio telescopes with so many antennas because the more antennas you have, the more information you have of the morphology of the image. No, if you have just a couple of telescopes, you can say if a circle is this big or this big, even if it's like a crazy supernova remnant, no? So you can only get like a little bit of information out of it. But if you start putting more and more and more telescopes, you start getting much more information at different scales, no?
Yeah.
So you may, from my face, for example, with two telescopes, you could see maybe how large my head is, no?
Yeah.
While if you start adding more telescopes, maybe you can see a shadow in my eyes, maybe here there is something, maybe there is a nose, no?
Yeah.
And if you added like 100 telescopes, then maybe you could get an image very, very similar to my face, no?
Yeah.
That is exactly what we are planning to do, no? Using the classical optical interferometry that I was talking about, the one that we use nowadays, it is really hard to go beyond 3-4 telescopes.
Yeah.
Really hard. While for us, the intensity interferometry that now is kind of reviving, give me 100 telescopes, doesn't matter. I can handle that easily. No?
Yeah.
So that's why lately it is starting to attract a bit of attention, also funding, also it's a very lively moment to be right now if you ever worked in intensity interferometry. It's a fun time now.
Okay, so why, how is intensity interferometry different from the amplitude interferometry?
Yeah, so the way in which you... So interferometers measure coherence. Let's this crazy complex thing to do, no? So depending on how separated your telescopes are when they are looking at a star, the coherence changes, no? And studying how it changes when you separate the telescopes, I am able to reconstruct your face. Let's just imagine that, no? So the key aspect here is how I measure coherence for
what
different...
What exactly do you mean by, like, what exactly is coherence?
It's a very complicated thing to explain, no? It's just a light on its way from your face to my telescopes. Organizes itself in a way that allows me to see correlations between different telescopes. So even if it's weird to think about it, two telescopes looking at the same star, even if they are separated, there are properties shared by the photons being independent, different photons being detected by different telescopes have things in common. And those little things in common is what we measure. It's super hard to explain.
Yeah.
It's really quantum physics.
Okay.
But the key aspect here is that how we measure that coherence that is super hard to understand, how we measure it is dramatically different in one method and the other. No. So in one method, you simply correlate signals, and then you see a tiny correlated signal between different telescopes. This means that what I was saying before, so all photons are coming randomly in time, but sometimes a single photon comes exactly simultaneously between two telescopes. And then another photon comes exactly simultaneously between other telescopes. But for example, if these two telescopes, one, I put it there, that does not happen anymore.
Okay.
Why? Quantum physics.
Okay.
But in the end, if you simplify things, if you just say, okay, there is something that I want to measure, I know it changes depending on the distance between my telescopes.
Okay.
No? Just let's simplify it.
Okay.
Then I tell you that if we measure that, we can create an image of a star. Then it's not that complicated,
okay.
Right?
Okay.
So then the key aspect here is that the optical amplitude interferometers make an actual photo of this coherence, and it's way better.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot do that, no? We need to gather enormous amounts of photons to actually be able to identify how many are correlated, etc. So our signal is much worse in the sense that we need bigger telescopes, no? But if we have those bigger telescopes, no? Then maybe we can have 20 telescopes simultaneously measuring the correlations between each telescope with the others. So that is exponential, no? So the more telescopes you have, you have exponentially more combinations of telescope pairs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is what gives you a lot of information on the shape of what you are measuring, right? So right now, we are not competing against this other technique.
Yeah.
It's not a competition. It's that for those bright sources in the sky, we may be able to study way more complex things than them,
mm-hmm.
because they have less telescopes, but they will be able to study way fainter objects.
Okay.
Like, for instance, what they have been doing right now in the galactic center, they have been measuring how stars are moving,
mm-hmm.
and they were able to determine the mass of the supermassive black hole in the center of our galaxy, essentially because they were able to track how stars were moving super far away with a crazy resolution, and that's thanks to interferometers. We would never be able to do that. It's way, way, way too faint for us.
Okay.
But if there is a star nearby,
mm-hmm.
that an exoplanet is passing in front of it, they won't be able to have enough resolution to be able to identify that tiny shadow passing in front of it, but maybe we could. Maybe.
Okay.
That's essentially... So we're not in competition at all. It's just different topics.
Okay. But I think I still, like, haven't really understood
I can understand that. Certainly.
So you were saying you have these photons, whatever, they come with this information that we don't understand because it's quantum physics. And you correlate this information between two telescopes.
Yes.
So it's like two different photos coming, hitting two telescopes, but they share this common
exactly.
thing.
Yes.
So we can correlate them. And but then you were saying something about, okay, if I move my telescope further away, then this correlation doesn't happen anymore.
Yes, unless if you, so depending on how that correlation changes, you can say how big is the star, for example.
Okay, so what, for example, like how is the signal, or like how does this look different for a smaller star compared to a large star?
Super, super easy. So you have two telescopes here. You
yeah.
see seven, a correlation of seven.
Okay.
If you separate them and you still see a correlation of seven, it probably means that the star is super small. If you take it even farther and you see a correlation of seven, it means that the star is crazy small, no? While if you have two telescopes and you see seven, three, zero, then you know that it is whatever diameter, no?
Okay.
So this is precisely the problem that right now we have with magic. With magic, we are using the magic telescopes, we modified the magic telescopes just a tiny bit so that we can perform these measurements. And what we see is that the two magic telescopes have a distance between them of 80 meters, no?
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at the stars of this size that I was talking about, this it's called 1 milliarcseconds. It's a very small unit, no? That accounts for what I was talking about of the 2 euro coin. So when we measure stars that are too small, what we see is that doesn't matter that we are at 80 meters, we would need telescopes farther away. But as we cannot move our telescopes, unfortunately, we are limited by the
okay.
distance.
Yeah, right. So because the larger the distance, the better your angular resolution is going to be.
Exactly.
So this distance puts the limit on the smallest size that you can resolve.
Exactly.
Okay. So then, okay.
But radio telescopes do exactly what I'm explaining.
Yeah.
Radio telescopes do the same. The problem is that they have so much information. So much information. So the complex thing to understand is really what radio telescopes do, because they work in complex numbers, not in real numbers.
Yeah.
No? So talking about complex numbers is complex and is even more difficult to explain. So just let me say that all interferometers work more or less the same way.
Yeah.
There are key differences, of course. But what we do is essentially that, no? It's creating this very weird measurement of something that is very hard to understand, but depending on how that weird measurement changes as a function of the distance between your telescopes is what gives you the information, no? That's why now we want to add more telescopes to the magic telescopes in order to have more and more information on the shape of the stars. That's
okay.
essentially it.
Okay. So wait, and what is then again the intensity like in this interferometry?
Yes, so the intensity interferometry is called that way because what we measure, instead of combining the optical beams, what we measure is the intensity, so the flux of light of the star, but very fast. No, so what we are correlating is intensity, just intensity, while for optical interferometers, what they combine is the phase of light. No, so light is not particles; they are waves. No, well, they are both.
But both.
So when you combine them, photons that have this phase and photons that have this phase cancel each other out.
Yeah.
Then they create this pattern. No?
Yes.
So then they are gaining from the information that not only amplitude but also phase gives them.
Yeah.
In our case, we cannot work with phases. The only thing that we can work with is intensity. Is we see a signal, just number of photons arriving to our photodetector. So it's not nothing. And from time to time, there are these correlations happening. No?
Mm-hmm.
So this is intensity as a function of time. It's really easy to understand. You are looking to a star, seeing how the intensity is changing as a function of time, and then there is this tiny correlation between the two signals, no? And And that is why it's called intensity interferometry. There is a tiny correlation between the intensities as a function of time of the different telescopes that you can do interferometry with.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So how big are these fluctuations?
Oh, they are absolutely tiny. Like when we measure, when we measure it, it's a measurement of something to the power of -6. So it means that it is a millionth of whatever you are measuring. So that's why we need so many photons, such big telescopes, because if you don't have a small telescopes, the number of photons that you will be getting is so tiny that maybe you are expecting zero number of correlated photons within different telescopes. If you don't detect a single correlated photon, it's impossible to do anything.
Okay.
No? You need very large telescopes for this technique. No?
Yeah.
And that's why we use Cherenkov telescopes. I apologize. This is super complicated to understand.
No, I mean, yes, but you're doing a good job in explaining it. You're doing
it. I'm trying. I promise I'm trying. I'm doing my best.
I'm definitely getting there for sure now. Like
Yeah.
Okay. So you talked about you want to add more telescopes. So
yes.
what's next for the future?
Yes. So the first telescope that we have built coming from this next generation of telescopes that is right now installed right next to the magic telescopes is the LST1 prototype that you know a lot about.
I do, but the listeners don't.
Yes. So magic telescopes are 17 meters in diameter. Okay, they are large telescopes. But then they look like the small brothers of the first prototype of CTA, which is the large-sized telescope, LST. The first prototype, which is 23 meters in diameter. It's enormous. No? Also, the camera, it's better than the than the magic telescopes. The pixels are better. They detect more photons, etc. So there are many reasons why, if we add this new telescope to the system of the two magic telescopes, the improvement would be dramatic. No, we would really, really become much better. No? But the thing is that another three of these telescopes are coming. No, so in the next, let's say, 5 years, three additional of these large size telescopes are being built.
Yeah.
This means that we will have a system of enormous telescopes at different distances. That is what what interferometers want.
No? Yeah.
All being able to be correlated among each other, which is something that is not common for optical interferometry. No? And that is very exciting. No? So the amount of science that you can do right now with the two magics is, yeah, that star looks this big. And that one looks this big. Maybe that one looks a bit like a melon. That's essentially it, because the number of targets that you can really target is the ones that you see with your eyes in big cities, like the ones that are really, really bright.
Okay.
Yes. But if you start adding enormous telescopes like the LSTs, then you can go to much fainter stars, you can do way more science. You can even create images of these stars. It's something that is going to be very exciting to do.
Okay.
Yes. And the first measurements may come relatively soon. So that's why we are getting excited. That will be fun to do. Also, something that is important for us. This is a science case that have not been essentially blessed by CTA. No, CTA's objective is very high energy astronomy. Right? So what we also want to do is to show that the changes in the telescopes are so minimal.
What are the changes?
Okay. So the changes are just for one pixel. For me to be able to gather the signal that pixel is measuring out of the camera, no? So Cherenkov telescopes are generally prepared to trigger, what we call trigger, to when there is a, you can think of in a storm, mm-hmm. thunder, no?
Yeah.
How do people make photos to those thunders, no? What they do is they have a camera prepared. When something bright comes, they create a photo, no?
The lightning, you mean, not the thunder.
Jesus. I'm a Spanish man. I apologize.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Lightning.
Yeah.
And so when the chain of telescopes do something very similar, no? They are waiting for something bright to happen like this in nanosecond times.
Yeah.
And when that thing happens, then we make a photo. No?
Yeah.
So it's not like we are measuring like each nanosecond making photos.
Yeah.
It would be impossible to gather such enormous amount of data. No? But what I need is actually that crazy amount of data from a single pixel, not from the whole camera,
mm-hmm.
from a single pixel, and to take it out of the camera. No?
Mm-hmm.
With that, I can live. It's really just a very tiny thing. So at CIMAT, we have experts in the electronics and in the camera that were able to identify the tiny changes that you need to do in order to extract this signal.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you extract the signal, the only complicated thing to do is to calculate this correlation that I was explaining. And for that, we need a big machine that is able to do that efficiently. And we already got funding for building this crazy machine. So we are going to spend a shitload of money on building that machine. Then also on applying those small changes in the camera, we will convince the LST collaboration and also, I hope, CTA collaboration to actually explain them that the change is so minimal.
Mm-hmm.
And also we can perform observations when CTA is just not observing.
Yeah.
So why not?
Yeah. That's, I think, one of the most sexy things about stellar interferometry, that, like, because with gamma ray observations, we cannot do them during bright moon periods.
Exactly.
So for a couple of nights a month, our telescopes are just standing still and not doing anything. And those are exactly the nights that you can use.
Yeah. So I would justify that to me, there are even sexier things that would justify observing also in dark observations.
Yeah.
No? But come on, like, we are getting science out for free during the time that you will be doing nothing. So
exactly. You're not stealing anything from anyone for like the original purpose.
We are not competing with anyone. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
so it's like no one will be like, okay, you're stealing time from me because you're not using time.
There is no competition. It's just
using.
Cooperation. Exactly. So there are these key aspects of intensity interferometry that are very synergic with Cherenkov telescopes, no? And it's just a shame that we don't exploit it, no? So there are other projects. Actually, mm-hmm. instead of using Cherenkov telescopes, going to classical optical telescopes, like the big ones, the Gran Tecan that we have in the Canary Islands, but also thinking about the extremely large telescope and these enormous telescopes that are being built right now. And perhaps you could do intensity interferometry to correlate telescopes that are 10 kilometers away.
Mm-hmm.
And then that could allow you to measure some crazy things
with
better resolution than the Event Horizon Telescope. No?
Mm-hmm.
That's why it is exciting, because perhaps we can measure the how matter is falling within a black hole here in the galaxy. No?
Yeah.
Or how the surface of a white dwarf is exploding during a nova and
mm-hmm.
things like that, no?
Yeah.
So there are very interesting things that perhaps developing this technique further can trigger, no? So it's a very early phase
mm-hmm.
of this revival of this technique.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's progressing smoothly, I would say.
It's looking good.
Yeah.
It's good that you got the shitload of money too.
Just last week or a couple of weeks ago, there was another big grant in Switzerland, also focused on intensity interferometry, with our collaborators from Geneva and other institutes in Switzerland, also collaborating with us in MAGIC. So it's like several groups working in intensity interferometry are already starting to get like big chunks of money.
Mm-hmm.
And when funding agencies put money on something, it means that it's probably interesting enough to attract that amount of money. So,
looking
things
good.
Are moving, looking good. Yes. Yeah. Yes. I'm happy.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm excited. Ask me 5 years from now. Maybe I will be super depressed, but right now I'm super happy.
Yeah. No, it's good. You look happy.
Yes.
Yeah. It's an exciting time.
Yeah. I hope that soon I will have more fun things to show.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think this has been a really great conversation. You did a good job in explaining it.
I did all I could.
Yes.
I promise.
Yeah.
I suffered.
It's a difficult topic. It's difficult, but I got definitely closer to understanding what it is you're doing. And I will recommend it to everyone in our collaboration because maybe they will also.
Yes, we need analysis. We need people publishing papers.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me. Ciao, ciao.
That's it. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and if you like this podcast, please hit subscribe. If you would like to know more about Tarek and his research or the magic telescopes, visit their website or social media channels. You can find all the links in our show notes. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or LinkedIn, and don't hesitate to contact us for any questions, feedback, or suggestions. Offspring Magazine, the podcast, is brought to you by the Max Planck PhDNet and the science communication working group known as the Offspring Magazine. The intro-outro music is composed by Srinath Rankumar, and the pre-intro jingle is composed by Gustavo Corizzo. For any feedback, comments, or suggestions, please feel free to write us at offspring.podcast@phdnet.mpg.de. Until next week, stay safe, stay healthy. Bye-bye.